kitchen and have so many of their families with us. And we want you to know that we are glad that you're here. And we're glad that your children were able to be in our program this year. And we're thankful for you doing all that you did to make that possible. We know that there's a cost to that. We know that there's also a lot of effort that goes into that. And we appreciate all the support that you gave to the school this year. And we also appreciate our teachers and aides and everyone who makes this school possible. I put in the bulletin, I added up, and I guess I need to go back to preschool because I had added up the years and I came up with 8. And then they told me that I was wrong, that it was 9. I added them up again. Sure enough, it was 9. I just misadded, couldn't even count to 8. But we have had 9 years of this preschool program, and it's continued to grow and do very well. And I think one of the reasons that we're so thankful for this program is because we love families and want to do all we can to love children and support families. And this is just another ministry that allows us to do that. And if we can ever help you and your family further beyond just this Saplings program, be sure to call upon us and be looking for all the other opportunities we have in serving families here at Seven Oaks. There were 2 little boys who were known around town as 2 of the most mischievous boys in town. It seemed like everything that went on, they had a part in it. They were 8 and 10 years old. And their mom tried, but she just couldn't get across the discipline she needed to them. And there was a preacher in town who was a rather large fellow and had a deep, booming voice. And he tended to have strong discipline. So she said, "I'm going to send these boys to them. Maybe they can get across to these young boys of mine." And so the younger one was going to go in the morning, and then the older one was going to go in the afternoon. And so the younger one goes in, and the preacher, he's going to come down hard on him. He says, "Son, do you know where God is?" The boy looks up at him, and then he says it again. The boy didn't say it. "Son, do you know where God is?" He's going to try to talk to him about God and heaven and his accountability and how he needs to start thinking about how he needs to act. And he finally said, he wasn't getting any answer. So the preacher thought, "I'll try again," in a larger voice. "Son, do you know where God is?" And the boy shot out of his office, ran home as fast as he could, went to a closet and hid in the closet. The older brother went in there and said, "What's the matter? What happened?" He said, "You're not going to believe it, but we're really in trouble now. They think we stole God." You know, when you think about it, though, all of us need to make sure our kids know where God is. They know where God is. And I'm not talking about in heaven or the answers we might give to that, but they know and have in their heart a knowledge of God. And in Matthew chapter 19, our text for this evening, if you have a Bible, turn there. We read a famous story about Jesus. And Ronnie read this text for us. It's only 3 verses. The Bible says, "Then children were brought to him, that he may lay his hands on them and pray. And the disciples rebuked the people." So the children were being brought by the parents. They were wanting Jesus to touch and bless their children. But the disciples, who probably were trying to protect Jesus, they were kind of running the bodyguards for Jesus, you might say, were trying to keep the children back and were rebuking the parents. But Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them. For to such belongs the kingdom of heaven." And he laid his hands on them and went away. 3 things. First of all, from this text we realize that we need to bring children to Jesus. President Theodore Roosevelt's father was also a politician. And he was involved in being a politician, very influential in New York City, I believe. But during the Civil War, he was active. And one time, he took his family to see President Lincoln on some business. And while he was there, his daughter got to sit in the lap of President Lincoln. He was there doing business. He was needing to meet with the president. He was influential where he had that kind of association. And he wanted his daughter to be able to meet and see the president. Now think about how neat that would be for your daughter to be able to sit in the lap of President Abraham Lincoln. How awesome that would be. Think about the intentionality. Think about the desire he had of wanting to get his daughter to Lincoln. Well, in a much greater way, how significant is it that we should want to take our children to the lap of Jesus? You see, when we do, they will be blessed. We want to take our children to Jesus. We need to treat them and help them to understand that what a special treat it is to be able to be in the presence of Jesus. They need Jesus as they go throughout life. You see, not only are they going to be blessed, but they will need Jesus in this life. There's a lot of problems, and this world is filled with all kinds of challenges. And one of the greatest things you can do is give your children a knowledge of Jesus. You see, few things are going to happen by accident, and this one is certainly not going to happen by accident. You see, these children didn't just happen to get to Jesus, but their parents were bringing them to Jesus. You see, it requires intentionality. In other words, we have to intend to share the message of Jesus with our children. We have to be the ones to instill this knowledge of God and this knowledge of right and wrong and this love of Jesus and the compassion of Jesus and the miracles of Jesus. So our children grow up knowing about Jesus loves them. And so we have to be intentional about that. We can't just let culture teach them. We have to do it. And one of the things that you are doing in being a part of this Saplings program is being intentional about their education. And I hope you'll also be intentional about their spiritual education as well. We need to bring children to Jesus. But one of the neat things about it is when you bring children to Jesus, is you also realize that there's a mutual desire. You see, in this text, we realize that Jesus wants children to come to Him. The disciples are trying to rebuke them and get them away, but Jesus wanted them to come. Now, when you think about the life of Jesus, He was a very busy man, wasn't He? I mean, He had all these people clinging to Him and wanting things from Him and desiring miracles from Him. But Jesus said, I'm going to make time for these children. Jesus values little children. He sees their worth and their value. And He wants them to model for us. If you look at verse number 14, it says, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. That what little children are, in many ways, is what we should be. If you go back one chapter to chapter 18, verses 1 through 5, His disciples were arguing about who's the greatest. That's something we adults still argue about. Who's the greatest? Who has the most things? Who has the most authority? Who has the most toys? Who has the most power? That's what we adults do. Who wins? Who gets the victory? But children, Jesus called a little child and He put them in His midst. And He says, I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. You've got to be humble. You've got to be dependent upon God. You've got to realize you cannot make it through this world on your own. That you need God. For whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. For whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be thrown in the depths of the sea. Wow, that's pretty powerful. Jesus says, I love children so much that if you're influencing and harming children, then I have something against you. And it's bad. In fact, He says that it would be better for that person to be thrown in the sea, that little child would not be influenced in such a harmful way. You see, He wants them to learn from Him early in life. He wants them to understand. You know, though Jesus was busy, He made time for children. There's a statement from John Calvin. One time he was walking with his wife in the woods, and she said, oh, I feel guilty taking you away from your very important work. And he said something, now these men, you may not want to use this line on your wife, because they may not get the significance of it, and it can sound pretty harsh in our culture. But he said, you are my work. And understanding that doesn't come across right if we view it as the wife and our kids or women viewing their kids or their husband as just like a task that has to be done, a duty that's obligated. But I think what he's saying, and the point I'm wanting to make from what Calvin says there, is that it's not time wasted when we're investing in our family. And sometimes we look and we think, well, Jesus wasn't doing something real important here. He could have been healing people or teaching people or preaching to the disciples. But Jesus says what he was doing was a part of why he came. The thing I want you to know is when you're investing in your children and you're leading your children to Jesus, it is some of the most important work you can ever do. And it's far more important than things you can help them out with, academic success or sporting success or hunting success or any kind of dance or any kind of competition we're involved in. Investing in your children's spiritual knowledge of Jesus is an investment in their soul. And so Jesus wants children to come to him. But he also wants children want Jesus. I believe that God put a spiritual desire within each person. Ecclesiastes 3:11 says God put eternity in our hearts. Children want boundaries and rules. They may not tell you this, but they do, don't they? They need boundaries. They need rules. And they desire unconditional love. When children learn about Jesus, they learn about humility and faith. And don't children have greater faith than us? I mean, they have faith. They want to believe. If you need something brought before the throne of God, have your child pray for it. Now, it needs to be something pretty simple. But isn't the prayer of a child beautiful? Because they have faith and they believe that when they ask it, God can answer it. You see, children want Jesus. They want the structure and the boundaries and the love that God can provide. I read a story. It came from one of Max Lucado's books, about a young lady who grew up in a, quote, Christian home. And I say, quote, because she grew up in a home where her dad was an elder and her mom was a Bible school teacher and involved. But they were involved in some cultic practices and they were involved in some abuse. And this girl was sexually abused from a very young age. But she was taken to church throughout all her life. And she never, as she got older, could not even call her mom and dad, because she had so much bitterness because of all the abuse she took. But as she got older, she realized that she needed love. And she put a lot of hatred and bitterness toward men in general. But it wasn't until she came to the point in life where she still remembered all the songs she learned in Bible school. And she remembered something from all the sermons she had heard, that God is love. And that though the examples she saw of a father and mother were not the kind of true father her heavenly father was, and that there was someone she could turn to as a true father. And it's only when she found that love and that forgiveness in God and that grace of God's love and his love at the cross, she was then able, through the help of the church and counseling, to move on in her life and have a productive adult years and marry a man and have a family. You see, think about the lessons you're instilling within your children that Jesus wants to give them about love and grace and truth and right and wrong. It gives them a moral compass to guide them throughout life. But finally, let me say, in this text, we read that we're not to forbid them. In Matthew chapter 19, the disciples were involved in rebuking the parents for trying to bring children to Jesus. And Jesus would say to them, "Let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them." Do not forbid them. Do not hinder them. Don't block their way. Now, this is the scary part of the sermon, because I got four kids. That's right. Us and the kings are tonight are graduating and the Ketchums are going to go on. Because we've had a child in this program ever since it began. 9 years of children in the program, and Caleb's going to repeat the 2-year-old next year, so we still got 3 more years. I got 4 kids. And here's the thing. I got to take my children to Jesus, and I can be a hindrance in them seeing Jesus, in them coming in contact with Jesus. You see, I can be like the disciples. Jesus is trying to get to the children. The children are trying to get to Jesus, but the disciples are saying, hey, let's keep y'all apart. Jesus is too busy, and you parents don't need to be doing this. I can hinder the process. How can I hinder the process? Well, I can hinder it, 1 Corinthians 11:1, through a poor example. You know, I told you that story about that lady. Natalie was her name. She overcame some very horrible examples and some hypocritical faith in her parents. But a lot of children don't overcome that. They never are able to make peace with the kind of examples they saw of someone who proclaimed to be a Christian but did not live like it. I can hinder it with a poor example, but I can also hinder it by not putting them in the right environment. You see, I talked about intentionality. If you're going to plant a garden this spring, or if you're already planting one, you can't make it grow, can you? But you put the seed in the right environment, and you hope that you have enough nutrients in the soil, and you have enough water, and you have everything you need to make that seed grow. And that's the same with children. We can't make them do things. All those little children we can, but as they get older, we can't ultimately make them come to Jesus, but we can put them in the right environment. Children can't come to Bible class on their own. They can't read the Bible on their own. They have to be put in the right environment. And we can hinder our children coming to Jesus by not putting them in the right environment. And so we must avoid poor environments. Avoid things that would be bad influences upon them. And our world certainly has a lot of those. And intentionally put them in good environments. And so, do not hinder them. Do not forbid them. I want to close with a poem. Some would gather money along the path of life. Some would gather roses and rest from worldly strife. But I would gather children from among the thorns of sin. I would seek a golden curl and a freckled toothless grin. For money cannot enter in that land of endless day, and the roses that are gathered soon will wilt along the way. But oh, the laughing children, as I cross the sunset sea and the gates swing wide to heaven, I can take them in with me. The emphasis of this poem is that children are what are valuable, that we need to love and teach and value highly the role we can have in influencing children. It's our custom here at Seven Oaks that we have an invitation hymn. And in that invitation hymn, we invite anyone to come forward if they would like to put Christ on in baptism and give their life to Christ. We also encourage people that might have a prayer request and would like to make that known. We would like to pray about that. Or if someone needs to rededicate their life or confess sin in their life. And we have a hymn to encourage anyone tonight that might want to come forward and make any of those requests. And we're going to stand and sing that at this time. Come, as together we stand and sing.
Oh, do not let the word depart.